A very good afternoon to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is Sunday, 17 November 2024. So as usual, we will be continuing our sharing from this book, the Heart Sutta. We are at page 97, lesson 18. So today's topic is also very interesting. Is on daily mindfulness, followed by the four right effort. Okay, as usual, we will be having our physical puja. So let us compose our mind, develop the sadha, virya, then mindfully we shall commence the puja chanting. Namo Bun Si Si Jia Mo Ni Fo. Namo Bun Si Si Jia Mo Ni Fo. Namo Bun Si Si Jia Mo Ni Fo. Namo Guan Si Yin Bu Sa. Namo Guan Si Yin Bu Sa. Namo Guan Si Yin Bu Sa. Namo A Mi Tho Fo. Namo A Mi Tho Fo. Namo A Mi Tho Fo. Namo Mi Lo Fo. Namo Mi Lo Fo. Namo Mi Lo Fo. Namo Yao Si Fo. Namo Yao Si Fo. Namo Yao Si Fo. Namo Pu Xian Pu Sa. Namo Pu Xian Pu Sa. Namo Pu Xian Pu Sa. Namo Di Zhang Wang Pu Sa. Namo Di Zhang Wang Pu Sa. Namo Di Zhang Wang Pu Sa. Namo Fo Pu Sa. Namo Fo Pu Sa. Namo Fo Pu Sa. Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Sakka Sangho Sanghang Namami. Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Panati Pata Vairamani Sikha Padang Samadhiyami. Adinadana Vairamani Sikha Padang Samadhiyami. Kami Sumichachara Vairamani Sikha Padang Samadhiyami. Musavada Vairamani Sikha Padang Samadhiyami. Sura Miraya Majapamadatana Vairamani Sikha Padang Samadhiyami. Sadhu Sadhu Sadhu. Okay, let us pay homage Triple Gem. Buddhang Pujami. Dhammang Pujami. สังฆังปุจเจมิ Invocation to the devas in this universe in their entirety. Let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good teachings of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release, Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samanta Chiyakawalesu Atra Gacchantu Devata Saddhammam Munidajasa Sunantu Sakkamokkhadang Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Iti peso bhagava arahang sama sambuddho Vijacarana sampanno sugato lokavido Anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati Satta deva manusanang Buddho Bhagavati Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehipaseko Opanayiko Pachatang Veditabho Vinohiti Supatipanno bhagavato saukkasango Ujjupatipanno bhagavato saukkasango Nyayapatipanno bhagavato saukkasango Samichipatipanno bhagavato Saukkasango Yadidang Chattari Purisa Yukani Atta Purisa Pugala Esa Bhagavato Saukkasango Ahuneyo Pahuneyo Dakkineyo Anjali karaniyo anuttarang punyang ketang lokasati sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, you all can be seated. Then we shall commence our sharing. Page 97. Lesson 18. This session was conducted earlier on at Wu Ping Jing Se, 30th June 2012, which is about 12 plus years ago. Okay, part 1, recapitulation and emphasis on the previous lesson. So the importance of Dhamma, especially sati or mindfulness, leading to a stability of daily mindfulness, is very important. That's why I summarize it again. Under 1.1, I say daily mindfulness is very important to enable one to realize the real Dhamma. Because without daily mindfulness, you cannot penetrate the real Dhamma. You need daily mindfulness. You may not understand the importance of daily mindfulness. Not until when you cultivate and realize, then you see, look back. Only you can comprehend the importance of mindfulness. The reason being, actually, sati is your true mind. Without sati, without mindfulness, you cannot be with your true mind. And without that true mind, you cannot penetrate the Dhamma, you cannot awaken, you cannot insight in the phenomena, you cannot realize the truth. But there is the one that can observe without distraction, without any distortion to what you see, where you need this sati to see things as they are. Otherwise, the mundane thinking, the mundane views, opinion, conditioning and belief system, they will come in and interfere with what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. And these are all wrong view, born of wrong perception. Because without that sati, all this will come in and distort your seeing and does not create understanding. So I read again. Daily mindfulness is very important to enable one to realize the real Dhamma as taught by the Buddha. Without this daily mindfulness, we are in awareness of all action and all movements, including your feelings, content of consciousness and Dhamma that arise and pass away from moment to moment within the present moment. The real wisdom cannot arise. When there is no wisdom, one will be conditioned by one's delusion. Whereas wisdom leads to peace, leads to joy, leads to love, compassion and harmony. So these are the characteristics of the mind having wisdom. You will develop what we call tranquility of mind, stillness of mind, which is your true mind. Then within that stillness and tranquility, there is love, there is joy, there is compassion, and everything is in perfect harmony. Then the next part, how you interpret and perceive a life situation or a phenomena at every moment of sense experience is very important. So as you cultivate, you will see the importance of all this. But every moment of sense experience, we tend to create thinking or reaction to sense experience. And via this thinking and reaction, if it's wrong thought, born of delusion, then your mind will stir. You will react to what you see, what you perceive through your senses, your hearing, smell, taste, tactile and thought process. So all this is going to create delusion in the living being. So this part very important. So how you interpret or perceive a life situation or a phenomena at every moment of sense experience is very important. Without wisdom, you can't. But like I stated, like what is stated here, I said when you have wisdom, then life itself is your teacher. Means everything within life existence can give you understanding and wisdom. So the enlightened one will perceive all things with wholesomeness only. Develop the wisdom to be at peace with all situations and learn to accept the reality of the moment so that one does not have to react to or worry about life. Instead, always act with wisdom, following Noble Eightfold Path, to resolve all life situations amicably. So this is the perfect summary of wisdom. Without wisdom, you cannot do that. Only when you have developed the wisdom, then you can be at peace with all situations and learn to accept the reality of the moment, like I said. Conditions are that, things will be like that. And that's what the Buddha taught too. Whatever arise, there are causes and conditions behind. So when you can accept the reality of the moment, means you have wisdom. So that one does not have to react to or worry about life. We react and worry about life is because we want things our way, which is not nature's way. So when you have the wisdom, you will act with wisdom, following Noble Eightfold Path, no negativity, to resolve all life situations amicably. And this is the way forward, to live life, so that you can not only be at peace, you can have the good life. Without this wisdom, you will continuously stir your mind, react to sense experience, and the lack of peace, the lack of harmony, give rise to suffering all the time. That's why people without wisdom, they suffer all the time. Then the next part is the four right effort. So this four right effort, as a Dhamma practitioner, we need to cultivate them consistently, so that you can develop the clear understanding. The four right efforts are a type of purification process, which are most important. In fact, when you enter the cultivation field, you will come to understand the importance of this four right efforts. First right effort is to abandon the unwholesome action, speech and thought that has already arisen. Means when you have wrong view, leading to wrong thought, wrong action, wrong speech, then you have to arise the right effort to abandon it. And how do one abandon this? The Buddha has taught us five ways to abandon the wrong thought, wrong speech, and wrong action that has arisen. And the first two way is described as thought-based, but initially is suitable and useful for normal practitioner of Dhamma who just started it, because they find it very difficult to do away with the wrong thought, because it has become habitual. Habitual in the sense that your wrong view constantly react to sense experience and create the wrong thought process, which give rise to delusion. So this wrong thought, or wrong thought that condition wrong action and wrong speech, will create karmic negativity. So all this thought, you need to abandon it. And the first way to abandon it, which is thought-based, is the Buddha said, think of the direct opposite wholesome thought. Means when there is this wrong thought that conditions you to react to what you see, what you hear, or what you smell, or tactile feel and think, then you have to apply the right effort to abandon them through cultivating the opposite wholesome thought. Take for example, when you see something you don't like, then you get angry. So this angry thought, which is a type of wrong thought, which is unwholesome, you need to think of the direct opposite thought. So instead of having anger, you must develop love or metta, loving kindness. So when you can radiate metta and wish all beings well and happy, may all beings be well and happy. May they all too be without enmity, without ill will and untrouble. So you cultivate this loving kindness or metta until it becomes a part of you, until it is very stable. Then you realize anger does not arise anymore. Then the other one is selfishness. When you realize you are selfish, you need to think of the direct opposite wholesome thought. You must have, instead of selfishness, generosity, the generous thought. So this generous, kind and gentle thought or speeches are very important. Then the other way is, instead of selfishness, you develop more and more contentment. Contentment. When you are contented, you will not be selfish. So all these are the direct opposite wholesome thought that one can develop more and more. Then after that is the second right effort. The second right effort, the Buddha said, you must have the wisdom to prevent the arising of all this unwholesome thought, unwholesome speech and action that have yet to arise. Means, instead of the first right effort, where you only do after the unwholesome thought, action and speech has arisen, this one, number two, is more difficult. You must have the wisdom to actually prevent it from arising. So how can you prevent it from arising? You must have basic Dhamma understanding, or we call the initial wisdom, Yoniso Manasikara. Once the initial wisdom, Yoniso Manasikara, is developed, then it will prompt you. Then when it prompts you at the moment of sense experience, you will not react and stir your mind anymore. It's just like the Buddha's teaching. Thing is just the way it is. Condition like that, things will be like that. Then everything is impermanent. Sabbe sankara anicchang. Sabbe sankara dukkang. Sabbe dhamma anatta. Then learn to see things as they are. So all these are the important yonisomanaskara or wisdom at the moment of sense experience that you can apply, so that the moment the initial wisdom arises, it will prevent the arising of this unwholesome thought, speech and action that has yet to arise. So to do this, you need to cultivate the first, second turning wisdom. Constantly listen to Dhamma, then constantly reflect, contemplate until the Dhamma becomes very, very clear. So once you can do the second right effort, you already progress. You already, I should say, not bad in your understanding of the teaching. So ability to prevent the arising of the unwholesome thought, unwholesome action and speech at every moment of sense experience is a type of wisdom that you have developed through the first and second turning training. Sometimes the third turning training also can apply, but mostly it's born of first and second turning of the Four Noble Truths wisdom. Then after that, the Buddha continues it. You not only have the right effort to avoid all evil, you also need to follow his advice to cultivate wholesomeness, goodness. That's why the third and fourth right effort pertain to cultivating wholesomeness. So the third right effort is to cultivate or develop the right thought, right speech and right action that are still not in you. Well, most people, when you are born into this world, you tend to inherit a lot of your past karmic conditioning, views and opinion. So the karmic conditioning or the karmic consciousness, they are very strong. They're all of your habitual reaction to sense experience towards what you perceive during the daily life. They play a big role in your life. So most people who didn't have the cultivation, I realize they seldom have right thought, right speech, and right action. They tend to develop a lot of negativity or action, speech, and thought process, because when they are young, normally they learn the bad habit first. They learn to manifest all those things that they can make use of to make people angry or unhappy. So all this leads to inability of the cultivator to cultivate the right thought, right speech, and right action, because firstly, they don't know what is right thought, right speech, right action. And their habitual tendency is, we are most kids, when they grew up, they learn the foul language, the dirty words, the negativity or action, speech, and thought process very fast. And they learn it through observing. The second possibility is through their past karmic conditioning. And most of these are seldom wholesome. And because of that, in order to cultivate the third right effort, it's not easy. So the Buddha explained very clearly. He said, the third right effort is to cultivate the right thought, right speech, and right action that are still not in you. Means you haven't developed it. So how do you develop it? For this, we need to contemplate, reflect on the Noble Eightfold Path Factor. How, from the first path factor of right view, it will give rise to right thought, right speech, and right action, so that you can live the noble life of an enlightened being. That's why Noble Eightfold Path is the embodiment of the cultivator. Once you have developed the cultivation, you will have all these noble qualities in you. That's why they are called noble ones. Very noble in all aspects of their life. They have noble wisdom that give rise to all the right view, leading to all the right thought, right speech, and right action. So right view is very important. If you don't have right view, your thought will go wrong. So if the first power factor of right view is not there, instead, the wrong view will condition all the other power factor to be negativity. If you don't have right view, then how can you arise right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood? Impossible. That's why without right view, you cannot develop the appropriate right thought, right speech, and right action. So you have to contemplate why the Buddha taught us, based on the Noble Eightfold Path, to develop the right effort to cultivate whatever right thought, right speech and right action that are still not in you. And this one you have to cultivate, not easy. I remember when I started, I reflect, I contemplate. Then I start to learn them. Yeah. Then I realize when you have right view, you don't have negativity. Means whatever thought you arise, or whatever action and speech you arise, they must not have the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion. Then from there, I realize the importance of having right view, leading to right thought, right speech and right action. Means no greed, no hatred and no delusion. No greed means no selfishness, no craving, no negativity, no deceitfulness, yeah. No desire, nothing. Yeah. Means there is no motive behind anything you do. You act sincerely. You act with love, with understanding. You resolve things amicably. So that's why whatever thought we arise. So initially, of course, what is taught in the Sutta or Theravada tradition is just the four Brahma Vihara state. They say you have thought of loving kindness, metta. That is right thought, which is not wrong. Then you have karuna or compassion. That is also right thought. Then you have mudita, which is rejoicing in the wholesomeness of others. That itself is also right thought. We have no negativity. Then finally, when your mind is equanimous, upeka, there is also no negativity. So that's why they started to teach using the four Brahma Vihara. That's why the Brahmas of the Brahma rhymes, 16 Brahma rhymes, they cultivate a lot of these four Brahma Vihara. Vihara is like a way place where you anchor your mind. So when you are a Brahma, normally your these four qualities are very good, very strong, very developed. Yeah. But then these are not the only right thoughts. Right thought can be many others. Then I reflected, I contemplated, I realized. Whatever thought that gives rise to understanding is also right thought. Whatever thought that can bring about harmony, can give people like understanding so that they need not have fear, depression and all these are right thought. So when you have thought of all the kind and gentle good thought that can bring about harmony, understanding and love, compassion. So all these are right thought. So right thought can be many apart from the Brahma Vihara. Yeah. When we have gentle, pleasant speeches and kind thought, they are part of the right thought and right view. Without all this right view to condition all this right thought and right speech, you cannot develop it. Even action also same. So once you have right thought, thought of like generosity, kindness, gentleness, the beautiful thought to radiate love, metta, compassion, to help the world, to be a blessing to all. These are all kind thoughts. Then when you are able to radiate all the goodness, like wishing all beings well and happy, and may all beings throughout the entire existence, known and unknown, seen and unseen too, be without enmity, without ill will, and untroubled. And may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. So all these are kind thought, loving thought. Yeah. Then when you see people, you radiate joy, you radiate love. You arise what they call the happy mind. Instead of getting jealous, envy, or what? No. Just radiate love. Then when you can like be at peace with the world, then everything you come to perceive, comes to interact with, there can be love and joy within you. Then all the kind thought will arise, the good thought will arise. No more fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, lamentation. No more reaction and stirring of mind. Everything can be perceived with wholesomeness, with joy, with understanding. Then after that, I remember, I move on from right thought to right speech and right action. These two are easier to manifest. Yeah. So right speech is like right thought. When you have the right view, you tend to have a lot of love, a lot of understanding. You tend to be very gentle, very pleasant. So whatever speech that is not the four wrong speech, which is mainly the first one is like harsh speech. When you have harsh speech, normally is related to anger. But when you have wisdom, of course, you can raise your voice, but you have no negative intention, although you may appear like harsh. Yeah, it is to instill understanding and learning to people. So that one, you can develop it separately if you can. Otherwise, you try to avoid using the what they call four type of wrong speech or negativity of speech. So first type is try to abstain from harsh speech unless you have developed the wisdom and the understanding. Then the second type of wrong speech is backbiting, saying bad things about people. You must avoid. You must not do that, but that one comes with ill intent. Negative intent. Then, of course, the third one is lie. Why do you lie? When you lie, it's because you have a motive. You are selfish. You want to deceive people. You want to take advantage of people. So, harsh speech, backbiting, and this what they call lying. They are the three type of wrong speech. Then the last one is more subtle, but most people don't realize it. Frivolous speech. Sometimes you think it's a joke, and you tend to say a lot of speech that are not useful, frivolous. But sometimes it hurts people. Well, not everybody understand your approach. So if you abstain from these four, then chances are you will not create the unnecessary wrong speech that has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. So to arise gentle, kind, and good speeches that can bring about harmony, understanding to help people, it's not easy. But then you can learn. Like if you are in the service industry, The way you answer the phone call or text message is very important. Yeah? You are the first line. Mm. So most people seek your help. They're really in a state of panic already or worry already. Yeah. Then you have to put ourselves in other people's shoes. If we were the one who call up and seek help, you know, a lot of people may not understand, especially if you are working for a government department or you are in a position of authority and all those things. So you tend to throw your weight around and like people depend on you. And sometimes the way you talk, you are very, very unfriendly. And also very negative in your approach. But if you are in the service industry, you cannot do that. You are there to serve the public, to help people. So some of these appropriate, kind and gentle speeches, you need to learn. The moment you pick up a call, you can address them either, "Good morning, how can I help you? May I know who is on the line?" Then tell people, "Don't panic, don't worry, we are here to help you. Just let me have your details, then we will send immediate help." All these are very appropriate, gentle, pleasant and kind speeches that can bring about harmony, understanding, and people feel good, feel confident calling up. Then the next more important one is your speech, how you conduct yourself when you are in the office, when you are at home with your loved ones, when you are interacting with your spouse, your neighbor, your friends. All this, if you don't have the appropriate right speech, it can land you into trouble. Yeah. And most living beings, they hardly practice any wrong speech. Yet to them, they are very arrogant, very selfish. They say, "Why should I speak in such a way to make people happy? These people need to be like told off and all those things." That is how you let yourself into unnecessary misunderstanding. Then your speech that has the anger, the unhappy tone inside, they are all wrong speech. That's why there must be understanding, there must be wisdom, there must be noble eightfold path, understanding behind all action and speech. And the way we act also, there must be no selfishness. That's why when you have generosity, loving kindness, contentment, reverence, all these are virtuous thoughts that can make you virtuous. When you see people, you greet them nicely, "Good morning," or "Sadhu," rejoice. Then a lot of all this good speech and good action, they come from all your virtuous conduct. When you have virtue, means you have wisdom. Without wisdom, there is no true virtue. So all this need wisdom. That's why we need to cultivate wisdom before we can contemplate and reflect on all the right thought, right speech, right action, and right virtue. So this third right effort is very important. We go back to the notes. So the third right effort is the right effort to cultivate or develop the right thought, right speech, right action that are still not in you. Means you haven't perfected it or you haven't done it. So you start to develop it. Then after that, the final right effort is, the Buddha say, to refine upon and perfect all these right thought, right speech, and right action that you have already developed in you. So this ability to refine upon and perfect all of your right thought, right speech, and right action is also another major field of cultivation. So if you can cultivate according to this four right effort, your personality will transform. You will become very different. You will become a living being that has the Dhamma. Yeah. And people like you, you will be like a blessing to all. And people like to become your friend, seek your advice, be close to you. Because you have these noble qualities of right view leading to right thought, right speech, and right action. And the way you live your life, you conduct your life, they are all without negativity, very wholesome. That's why Noble Eightfold Path has this special, unique, noble qualities to make living being very noble. That's why they are called Noble Ones, the Enlightened Ones. They are noble in every aspect of their life. They have right view, leading to right thought, right speech, right action. Then the way they live their life also according to right view, right speech, right action, and right thought. That's why their livelihood also in accordance. Then after that, they will constantly refine upon and perfect all of their right thought, right speech, and right action. So all this will bring about the accumulation of the four right effort. Then after that, the last two power factor is Samasati and Samasamadhi. So Samasati is perfect mindfulness or right mindfulness. Some texts translate it as right, but it should be perfect mindfulness or perfect Samadhi. No more wrong mindfulness and wrong Samadhi. Asati, asamadhi. But the one that is in accordance with Noble Eightfold Path, your mindfulness will be in accordance. It's not going the wrong way. So the cultivation of samasati is very important. Means the perfect sati, which is a free mind in the state of tranquility and stillness. So the free mind that is in sati, when you stabilize it, it becomes samadhi. So it's not a conditioned state. A conditioned state may not lead to samasati or samasamadhi. So hopefully with this new understanding, you can cultivate the four right effort in a more deeper way to develop the understanding. Okay, we move on to the next part. The three types of suffering. So these three types of suffering is normally taught in the Theravada tradition. But the Mahayana tradition also, they incorporated this into their teaching too. But the way they explain it is slightly different. But the message is more or less the same. So the first type of suffering according to the Theravada tradition is dukkha dukkata, or what we call suffering within suffering. So this is basic suffering in its most obvious ordinary form. Means suffering within the physical body or form. Like when you experience birth, old age, sickness and death. Then if your mind via delusion, clings and attached to this bodily suffering, then there is double suffering. There is not only your body is sick, your mind also is affected. That's why dukkha, dukkata, suffering within suffering. So this is the most obvious and common type of suffering. Then the second type of suffering is they call sankara dukkata. Sankara dukkata means suffering that arise through thinking, sankara activity, the mind state that condition you into suffering, like when you project your thought, you develop the fear, the worry, the anxiety, the sorrow, the lamentation. So this one make people depressed, give rise to a lot of mental suffering. So suffering due to sankara activity means suffering due to unsatisfactoriness of conditioned state. Means everything within our conditioned world is dependent originating condition arising cause of phenomena. You don't have the wisdom to understand this, then you use your sankara activity or your thought process to go and think about it and try to seek an answer, then you will suffer. Because the instrument that you use cannot lead you to the wisdom that is beyond thought, beyond mind. But the instrument is thought itself. So thought itself is limited, egoic. So how can it free you? So when you understand that suffering due to unsatisfactoriness of conditioned state means they go the way of nature, like our physical body. They are of the nature to grow old, get sick and die, for it has not gone beyond old age, sickness and death. But that physical body is not you. Is dependent originating condition arising cause of phenomena. So how can it bring about satisfactoriness? That's why we call it the what they call conditioned dhamma. Conditioned dhamma born of condition means they are all not a permanent, unchanging entity. Dependent on condition, they arise. And when condition ceases, they cease to be. When condition continue to manifest, they continue to sustain itself. And it appears like it's real, exists. But when condition ceases to be, it ceases. And this one follow nature's law. So you cannot understand all this, especially the Panchaniyama, you will suffer where you want things your way, which is not nature's condition or nature's way. So this type of suffering that is conditioned by your sankara activity, which is your thought process, that one will trigger a lot of mental suffering. Because without wisdom, you cannot see, you cannot awaken, and you cannot understand. You need to awaken to it. Sankara anicchang, sankara dukkhang. All of sankara, they are impermanent. They come and they go. Then all of sankara bring about suffering when you don't have the wisdom. Then the last one is sabbe dhamma anatta. Means all of dhamma, whether it's the condition or the unconditioned, they are also anatta, non-self, not a permanent, unchanging entity where you can cling on to, grasp on to, hold on to, and say, this is me. Therefore, all this can be mine. There is no such thing. Then the third type of suffering is what they call in Pali, viparinama dukkata. So viparidhamma dukkata is suffering due to change, caused by change. So everything within the conditioned world is impermanent or unsatisfactory. And if one cannot accept this reality or this universal characteristics of impermanent, then suffering will arise. We are wanting good things, Yongyi. Means you want to have good condition, good life. Everything must go your way. So you will suffer if you have this type of wrong view or wrong mindset, because suffering caused by change, that is the reality of the conditioned world. So these are the three types of what they call suffering that is taught in the Theravada tradition. Then there is a note. Suffering due to change, I explained on page 43 of the Buddha's Ancient Path by Piyadasi, Venerable Piyadasi, or Piyadasi Thera. So this book is a good book, the Buddha's Ancient Path. The Dhamma inside there is fairly authentic and very good. So it is defined under this book by the Venerable Piyadasi or Piyadasi Thera in his footnote. He said, viparinama dukkata or dukkha comes under the category of unsatisfactoriness due to impermanence. He said, all the pleasant and unhappy feeling, or happy feeling, means all pleasant and happy feeling that man can experience, they will fade away and disappear. As the Buddha say, even the good feeling that a yogi or meditator experiences by attaining to the four jhanas or mental absorptions comes under this category of viparinama dukkata, because they are impermanent, they are transient, anicchang, impermanent, they lead to suffering and is subject to change. But the dukkha mentioned here is certainly not the pain and suffering that living beings in general endure. When the Buddha points out, what the Buddha points out is that all things impermanent are unsatisfactory. They suffer change every moment, and this change brings about unsatisfactoriness. For whatever that is impermanent is unsatisfactory. So the famous Pali saying, Yadani Chang. Yang anicchang tam dukkhang. That is, there is no lasting bliss or happiness. We go on to the next part, meditation. So there is a question by one of the Kayamita at the time. As always emphasized by Bertio, right understanding and right view are very important. If one lacks this, then how can one progress along the path of Dhamma? So I answer, I say, according to the Buddha, the first of the Noble Eightfold Path factor is Samadhi, or right view. Without this right view, you cannot proceed with the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path. And this Noble Eightfold Path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha, is very important. But if your view is wrong, all views are wrong, then all your thought process will be wrong. As thought and mental intention condition your speech and action and the way you live your life, then all of your other subsequent path factors of the Noble Eightfold Path will also be wrong. Hence, it's important to have right view or right understanding as the first path factor within Noble Eightfold Path. Yeah. Then the three type of right views with regards to all the spiritual law that governs all of life and existence are very important. And they are, so these three types are the spiritual law. The other first two is scientific law. The first spiritual law is the law of karma, karma niyama. So this one defines clearly how karma operates. So the Buddha always start with is chetena that I call karma. Then under the fifth daily contemplation, he also state, we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of karma. So understanding this law of karma is the first right view, the spiritual law that governs life and existence. And this one is very important. When you understand this, you will take care of karma. Our life depends almost entirely on karma. So ability to understand this spiritual law is very important. Then the second spiritual law is citta niyama, or the Buddha called it the law of the mind. And he taught the famous Paticca-samuppada, the dwelling. How we function as a human being. How avijja paccaya sankara, sankara paccaya vijnanam, vijnanam paccaya namarup. Then namarupa paccaya salayatana. Then it continues until the whole mess of suffering. So this Paticca-samuppada, you need mindfulness to understand. Without mindfulness, you cannot see the link. You cannot understand how you function as a human being. And you cannot even understand who are you, what are you. So the wrong view, sakayadity, will keep on manifesting. Then the third spiritual law is Dhamma Niyama, the law of all other nature's truth. They include the Four Noble Truths and its returning and all the essential Dhamma that spin off from the Four Noble Truths. So nature's truth, anything that can explain the way things are is the truth. So these are very important definition. Nature's truth means whatever that obey nature's law, they are called nature's truth. So anything that can explain the way things are is the truth, born of nature's law. So the Buddha's advice, via Dhammapada verse 183, to avoid all evil, do good and purify the mind, comes from this first right view with regards to the law of karma. Where according to the Buddha, each and every one of us is like the fifth daily contemplation I already mentioned just now. We are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of our karma, which is also one of the five daily contemplation that the monk are told to reflect on daily. Hence the importance of taking care of one's karma. If we know that our life depends entirely on karma, where we are born of it, heir to it, conditioned and supported by it, and we are what we are because of it. So if you don't take care of karma, what will happen to you? You will suffer. Then how do we take care of karma? We need to train our mind to be ever mindful or heedful of our mental intention, so that our actions, speech and thought process are always right and appropriate to avoid all the negative or evil karma we are keeping our precepts and cultivating their ennoblers. Yeah, so we move it up. So all this, the mental intention behind our action, speech and thought process are very important. So we must cultivate all the fora effort until we are sure that all this right speech, right action and right thought, they are right and appropriate, so that you can avoid all evil or what we call negative intent, that condition, negative karma. So to avoid all evil, we must keep the precepts, minimum 5 precepts, because these 5 precepts, they are very important. If you violate them, you break them, they constitute major evils. That's why if you look at the 5 precepts, it's been tailored in such a manner that if you violate them, you will commit major evil. Then here I add in the part, their ennoblers. Means not only you keep your precept, you must also cultivate their ennoblers. Means making you more virtuous, like the first precept. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. I undertake the training rule to abstain from killing and causing harm to living beings. So what is the ennobler? The ennobler is, I don't kill, I don't cause harm. So what is it? Means you must have love, you must have compassion. Means instead of just abstaining from killing or causing harm to fellow living being, we must have the ennoblers. Means we develop more virtuous quality instead of causing harm, kill. We have to have metta, loving kindness, compassion, so that we will not harm or kill. Then second precept is we abstain, we undertake the training rule to abstain from taking things that don't belong to us. Means abstain from stealing or misappropriating. So instead of developing this evil intent, we should develop the ennobler to be generous. We not only don't steal, don't take things that don't belong to us or misappropriate things or deceive people. We should be generous, kind, helpful. Then the third precept is we undertake the training rule to abstain from sexual misconduct. So this one you must develop more and more contentment. What is allowable? Then when you have contentment, that is an ennobler. Because most of these are born of selfishness, craving, desire. Otherwise, they won't break the third precept, especially delusion. Then the fourth precept and the fifth precept is the same. If you look into it, they constitute major evil. So the ennobler also, you can develop it. So the fourth precept is we undertake the training rule to abstain from all the what they call wrong speech or harsh speech, and frivolous speech, backbiting, and also backbiting. So all this, when you have all the understanding, then you can develop that. Then the ennobler of it is, of course, you not only don't lie, don't cheat, don't deceive, or even do all those negativity of action, speech, and thought process. But you develop the ennobler, means you speak gently, pleasantly, good and kind speeches, gentle, pleasant and kind speeches that brings about understanding, harmony, to be a blessing to all. So all these are the ennoblers that can develop into very wholesome, virtuous quality in the cultivator of the way. Then I read to you the last part. This will enable us to heed the first two advice of the Buddha, that is, to avoid all evil and do good. And the third advice of the Buddha is to cultivate the 10 steps of the Avijja Sutta, which includes the four foundations of mindfulness to purify one's mind. So here, the third advice is to purify your mind. That one is more elaborate. So to purify one's mind, you need to cultivate the 10 steps of the Avijja Sutta. Because this is a sutta on ignorance. Then there is an enlightenment cycle where the Buddha explained there are 10 steps involved in the enlightenment cycle. So the first step is to have kayamitas. Kayamita is Dhamma friends. Dhamma friends are friends who cultivates the Dhamma. And there are two types of Dhamma friends. One is normal Dhamma friends that walk the path of Dhamma, but haven't really developed the enlightenment. The second one is they are noble friends. Noble friends means they are Dhamma friends that has the Dhamma. They have already developed the understanding and the awakening. So any of these Dhamma friends are very important. In fact, the Buddha called it the prerequisite to become enlightened. So that's why our, what they call, when I started the teaching, I call our group Kayamita, Brother Theos Kayamita, means Brother Theos Dhamma friends. And when you have Dhamma friends, step one, it will bring about condition for step two, the opportunity to listen to the true Dhamma. As Dhamma friend, you will have a lot of condition and opportunity to attend our Dhamma classes, listen to our Dhamma sharing, Dhamma talk. Not only we have the website nowadays, we also have weekly session, spiritual activity like annual retreat, spiritual trips, then monthly house dana, etc. Then you also have the Dhamma books. When they become transcribed, when Kayamita help to do the transcription, then we put it into print, then we distribute to Kayamitas and all those that have affinity to receive them, to really benefit from them. So all this will satisfy the second step, which is opportunity to listen to the true Dhamma. Then when you have opportunity to listen to the true Dhamma, you gain understanding. Then after that, step three is a natural consequence. Step 3 of the Avijja Sutta is you will develop faith or confidence in the Buddha and his teaching. That one is very important. Then after that, you will develop step 4, which is yoniso manasikara, means the initial wisdom wisdom at the moment of sense experience. So this yoniso manasikara, as you develop, your mind become more calm, more stable, more aware, less stirring, less reaction. Means at the moment of sense experience, you are more at peace. And because of that, there is more space between thought. That's why your sati sampajana, which is step 5, can come about. So when you have step 5, means you have sati and sampajana, or clear comprehension, mindfulness and clear comprehension, then this step 5 will enable you to have sense restraint. That's why step 6 is sense restraint. When your mindfulness becomes very stable, you can prevent the arising of wrong thought, wrong speech, and wrong action. That's why you will not violate your precepts. So this ability to have sense restraint is step 6. By then you are at least a sotapan. Then after that you continue to cultivate and refine upon the sense restraint. Then moving on to the cultivation of the third and fourth right effort, it will lead to the three types of right conduct. Means you will have right thought, right speech, right action developed. So by the time you finish step 7, you would have become at least a Sakadagami, second stage of sainthood. And then only you are ready to cultivate step 8, which is the cultivation of the four foundation of mindfulness. These four foundation of mindfulness, the Buddha mentioned clearly in the sutta. He said, after overcoming covetousness and grief, which is, you must be at least a second stage of sainthood practitioner before you can cultivate the four foundation of mindfulness. Yeah. Then when you cultivate these four foundation of mindfulness, it will be relatively easy, because by the time you finish step 5 and 6, oh sorry, step 6 and 7, you would have a lot of understanding. Then after that, you will come to encounter the seven factors of enlightenment, like it keep on arising during your practice. It means you're on the right path. And that one also signifies that you are on step 9. Step 9 is cultivation of the seven factors of enlightenment. Means these seven factors of enlightenment, which is sati, dhamma vichaya, then piti, avirya, followed by piti, then pasati, followed by what we call samadhi, then upeka. So these seven factors are enlightened, they keep on arising. Means you are already assured you are on the right path. Otherwise the factors of enlightenment, which is very conducive for enlightenment, will not arise. Then step 10 will be the automatic transformation. Means the natural consequence of step 9 is step 10. Enlightenment in the here and the now. That's why the 10th step of Avijja Sutta, they are very important. Okay, I think we have to end here. Eh? We are on page 100. Eh? So just relax body and mind, maintain some form of mindfulness or awareness within. Eh? So the four support, very important. Relax into every mind state that arises. Body and mind, then maintain awareness, just aware, finish. Don't try to know, don't try to do anything, just maintain awareness, then stabilize the awareness, then stay at the heart area, then let everything happen. The last support is trust. Okay, I will set the alarm for 45 minutes, then you can continue with your meditation. You all can now slowly mindfully come out of the meditation. Then we will continue with our second session, which is meditation reporting, followed by whatever question you may have, Q&As, and also sharing of Dhamma in daily life.
Amitabha, Brother Teo, and yeah. Mrs. Teo, and all Kayantas.
Amitabha, yes. Yeah,
As I was saying, I wanted to share the daily mindfulness to benefit some Kayantas. There are questions about daily mindfulness. How do you establish mindfulness in daily life?
That one very important. Yes.
So I will talk about my own experience in establishing the daily mindfulness. But of course, I will share the incident that happened to me most recently, Brother Teo. But of course, they may not be able to do what I'm doing, but they just need to have faith.
That this can be done. That is the most important one.
To have faith that this can be done.
Later on,
I share how to develop it in a smaller ways that they can cope, So recently on Wednesday, I will talk about what happened to me on Wednesday. Because I went to Sabah, right, Brother Teo, I went to the temple and I renew my determination, my resolve, to work on the 5 stages of Bohi mind development, in front of the
Buddha.
I cannot be complacent in my cultivation. So because of that, I said I better mark up and do better than this, So that's where give me that kind of sada and virya to push myself really hard to really do it properly, and that is how I also start to develop my cultivation in a stronger manner. To strengthen my resolve, Brother Teo. In other words, that way.
Correct.
So Wednesday, recent Wednesday, right? I woke up from my morning. I will explain how it happens, Brother Teo, so that the Kayamitas that listen will understand, how it happens, it's not like I make the aspiration and don't do anything, that can happen by itself. By miracle. It's not
that'll
like that
good.
One.
So
I wake up Brother Teo often advises you have to start once you wake up, wake up.
Okay? Yeah,
so in that day I wake up, I did a 30 minutes of meditation, Brother Teo. So after I do my meditation, I will go and do my daily chores. First thing I do is I go and boil water, kettle water first. After which I do pay my respect, to the triple gem. Okay. And then after that, I go and hang the clothes with it. Hang the clothes outside, so that you get the sun and dry while waiting for the water to boil, So after that, Brother Teo, I prepare my puja tea, puja tea. So I have this habit to do it, I water boil, I put the hot water into the cup, the so-called cup, the pot of tea, with the tea leaves inside, and then after that, I let it simmer for a while I prepare the 3-liter cups for the tea, offering. So, as I prepare the thing, it's like what Brother Teo often tell us, drinking of a cup of tea, is a Zen meditation. Brother Teo always say that, right? But this is not drinking a cup of tea, this is making a cup of tea,
can be done,
Yes. So I do that. Okay. So just what I told Brother Teo, I was from meditation down to preparing the hot tea, the hot water, to hanging the clothes, to preparing my tea, I was very mindful doing all this, step by step doing all these things.
Yeah.
And And of course, later I will explain to you how it happened, the way that I see it, brother. Huh? But of course, brother, you know yourself lah, through my explanation, brother, you also understand. Lah. But maybe to Kayamita, he said, what is going on? I don't understand at all, you know, how it happens. Lah. But brother, you and I fully understand what I'm sharing. Lah, huh? So I was preparing the puja tea, you know. So from the hot little pot, the small little pot of hot tea, right? It's not that hot, like actually, although it's using the hot water after boil. I waited for it to simmer a bit. I mean, to not simmer, to like soak the tea, to get the flavor of the tea out first, you know. And then after that, I pour the tea out into the small 3 liter cups that I prepared, you know. So as I'm pouring, I'm doing, you know, until I fill up the 3 liter cups, you know. And when I finished doing that, radio, something awakened me, you know, radio.
Oh, okay.
Well, I have this clarity of mind, and it tells me the story. No arising, no ceasing, you know.
Oh, sadhu.
Suddenly, I awakened to it. Wow,
very good.
What? And then I realized all phenomena empty of characteristic, you know. So, this is how it happened, you know, that in a daily chores, very simple things, you know, like Brother Theo used to say, drinking a cup of tea is a zen.
Yeah, it's a zen.
Oh, it's a tea preparation of the puja is also
a when
zen
you are mindful, you can actually understand what is happening. There is no mind involved at all.
Yes, exactly. So it's just that, that thing, so the clarity so sharp, right? Like it awakens me. Oh, you know, like I don't have that. It's like strike me. The meditative mind just appear like that and tell me this. You know, wow, it's like out of a sudden it happens, unfold naturally. The Dharma, you know. Dharma just come out by itself. It's not like I through thinking, trying very hard, master my mind, think,
It will let you understand. It will let you understand. The insight will be there. Then you will have this deep penetrative understanding that it is not that one. No arising, no ceasing. Although the word that describe it is just explanation. But the actual happening at that moment, everything ceases.
Yes. So it was like, there was so much joy for me, you know, that I doing this simple chores can awaken me in a deep manner, a profound manner, you know, I can understand, you know, this Heart Sutra in a deeper level than just reading the text, you know, trying to understand it. It cannot work that way, you know. Although you try very hard with a thought that is so limited in understanding.
When you try with the thought, you cannot understand. But when you are just aware and you read with what they call mindfulness, with the faith, then suddenly you will awaken you. So no need to strive with the thought and all those things. It just gradually and naturally through the awareness, then things will unfold.
Yes, so the Dharma just flow out by itself this way. Then, I mean, of course, then I mean, when I realized that, right? So I say, wow, that's so beautiful, Dharma. I can see, I mean, I can witness with my meditative mind. It's not the physical eye that people always think, what can I see? What can I learn? It's not the physical eye. Meditative mind in the true
Correct.
Mind, the awareness nature that you see, you insight into this, you know. That is the difference, you know. It's the physical eye that
correct,
see, you
correct.
Know. So this the karmita, the cultivators need to know. It's like that, you know. It naturally happened. You didn't even look or search for any Dharma. You know?
It come by itself.
And it's so powerful, you know. It's so powerful that it awakens you, you know, like, you know?
It's very penetrative.
Yes. So it's like, it linked to the Dharma that Brother Theo has taught in the Heart Sutra, you know, and you can fully understand the depth of the meaning of the words, although the words mean nothing, you know, it is, it's not the word, it's the so-called experiential, the taste of the Dharma,
correct.
So that brings me to mind the one story that heard from the temple in Gongming San, Brother Theo, maybe I will share this, you know,
can.
Because I find this story very inspiring to me lah when I first
Oh,
heard it.
sadu.
Yes. So maybe I want to share with Payamitas to give them faith, you know, in cultivation and in understanding what is the true Dharma, you know. Okay, and not the your through your thinking mind, you know, that you want to see, you want to search for the Dharma. Okay. So this story is like this. You know, maybe Brother Teo also heard this before. It's about Venerable Vakali. Venerable Vakali. This Venerable Vakali, he is very attracted to the Buddha image. I mean, he was facing the Buddha. He was very attracted to the good appearance of the Buddha. He always want to look at the Buddha, you know. And every time he got opportunity, he wants to look at the Buddha, you know. So the Buddha actually read his mind that he is attracted to the image, the appearance, you know, of the Buddha. And of course, he also lectured him, you know, this is just a body, you know, why are you attracted? It's like you have a lot of attachment to him, you know. He must always see the Buddha, you know, the kind of thing. He doesn't feel very depressed, the kind of thing, you know, this Venerable Vakali. So in this story, this Buddha went to Tawatimsa. So he to teach the mother, you know, the Abhidharma and things like that. After the Vasa, the Buddha will descend from the Tawatimsa heaven back to earth, you know. So when everybody knew about it, and Vakali, Venerable Vakali also knew about it, he also want to be the first to welcome the Buddha back, you know. So he somehow he can, he dress up, I don't know how he manifests himself, but he has the probably he has some powers, the supernatural power. He can also change himself into a monarch, you know, dress up in a monarch and prepare himself to welcome the Buddha. So, but of course, the Buddha, as he descend down from heaven, he saw Venerable Vakali, you know, and he reads his mind. After that, the Buddha tells him what, you know, Venerable Vakali, you are not the first one to welcome me, you know. But of course, Venerable Vakali was like a little bit sad, you know, like, I mean, I don't know, like he wants to be the first, but yet he's not the first to welcome the Buddha. So he was like surprised, what is going on? No, I'm here to see. You see, the thing is, you are using your physical eye to welcome to see the Buddha, but the teaching of the Buddha is not like this, you know. He said, whoever sees the Dharma sees the Buddha.
Sees me,
you know? Sees me, you know. So he told Venerable Vakali, you know, you didn't welcome me first, you know. Then of course the Venerable Vakali want to know who actually see you first, you know. So the Buddha tell him, you know, it's a Venerable Subhuti that see him first, you know, because Venerable Subhuti sees the Dharma first, you know, before you welcome me here, you know. So that story was very inspiring to me, you know. So when you see the Dharma, you actually see the Buddha, you know. It's not like physically you cling to the Buddha image, the Buddha appearance, the physical body.
Yeah, it's not the physical
the
form.
You don't see the Dharma in this way with your physical eye, you know. So it was like very inspiring for me, you know, to learn the Dharma this way.
Your
meditative mind actually, you know, see the Dharma, you know, not the physical eye that see the Dharma, you know. So it was very interesting, and to understand the teaching of the Buddha through this way, that is the real true Dharma, you know, that, not through the thinking mind, the physical eye, you know, that we learn. That is very mundane, learning, you know, that you can do for your job, for doing your duties, you need a physical eye. For carrying out your work in the office, you need your mundane eye, you know, mundane mind to do the things, the work. So coming back to this daily mindfulness, right, that people always ask. In fact, recently I heard there is a cultivator that asked, how do you develop mindfulness, you know, in daily life, you know. Usually, you see, the thing is like, maybe Brother Teo can help in telling to reinforce the teaching of developing sati, you know. Now, the message is this, the question is like this. I mean, when I'm in a retreat, I'm able to, or maybe I'm in seclusion, I'm able to be very calm, peaceful, you know. But when I meet with people that may have differences in views and opinions or conflict, then you feel very stirred up. Your mind become no more sati. You lost less of sati. Become heedless, you know. So, I mean, they want to know how to establish the mindfulness such that it's continuous, you know, no less mindfulness. But for me, because as a beginner, I mean, I want to relate to them the difficulty that they have in establishing mindfulness. So I explained to one cultivator that mindfulness, it is, you have to think of it as a very simple way. Don't be so complicated, you know.
Yeah.
You know, don't use your knowledge to look for it, to understand it. Be simple, just do simple thing, you know. Then slowly, step by step, when you gain the understanding of what is sati, then the progress very fast already. Then you progress very fast. So the key thing is you must get it right first. That's very important, you know. So I just tell them, like what Brother Teo said, do the religious routine, you know. First thing, you wake up, you must be determined to establish
to be
your
aware.
Mindfulness. To be aware, you know. But the awareness cannot come so easy. Don't I do one day, 2 day, or 1 week, then I give up because I don't see anything. So the thing is, you are also expecting some result. You cannot, everything, just let it be, you know. Just be natural, do it, and don't expect 1 2 week, you know, your Monday mind see the sati already, cannot one, you know. In fact, for me, Brother Teo, when I first learned from Brother Teo in 2017, right, I don't get my sati immediately, you know.
You can't, because initially most people they are not trained, so they have a lot of heedless thinking. So what happened is you continue to do with patience. Then one day when the causes and conditions are there, when the mind enters sati, the cultivator will know one. Then they will know, how come suddenly no thought, nothing. Their awareness and their kaya, everything is one already. Then later on, they will also come to understand, like what you give as example. He who sees the Buddha, actually may not see the Dhamma. But he who sees the Dhamma sees the Buddha. Straight away they will understand. Because who is the Buddha? The Buddha is the embodiment of his wisdom and virtue, his perfection. So if you see him via the physical form, that is the mundane form and mind that he comes with. So before that thing happened underneath the Bodhi tree, that physical form is just a physical form. Then even after you see the Buddha as a Sammasambuddha, but that one is just a physical form where people express it that way. But he is a Buddha is by virtue of his perfection, the wisdom and the virtue. Then underneath the Bodhi tree, when the Sambhogaya Kaya come back to his nature, together with the physical body, the what they call Nimana Kaya, then it manifests into the one that actually speaks the Dhamma. And that is the Dhamma Kaya. So the tri-body that performs the function of a Buddha is the physical Buddha. But the actual Buddha is the embodiment of his wisdom and virtue. So he who sees the Dhamma sees the embodiment of what the Buddha has seen. So that part becomes very clear. Then even like the daily mindfulness that you try to explain, also same, people must have the faith, like what you said. You just do. You don't try to be eager to develop it, then use the thought determined to become mindful. The thought that determined to be mindful cannot be mindful, you just do. Then when the mindfulness come, the awareness nature will know, because the awareness and the phenomenon move as one. Then no thought one, everything is just within that moment. Then sati will stabilize. Then you will understand it, like you said. Once you understand what that thing is, Then no need to exert effort, nothing on. It just happened naturally by itself. It will just unfold. That's why the difference between cultivation and theory is very, very big difference. But those who actually use the thought to try to rationalize it via theory cannot understand the actual happening. The actual happening is totally different. The actual happening will come when the causes and conditions are already there, and the thought must not be there. When the thought is there, you cannot be in sati. But the sati is the natural state of mind, which is the true mind that is without thought. The moment you are without thought, you already in sati. And the statement is very profound, very deep. So most people find it very difficult to understand. So very good, Sadhu.
Yeah, so Sadhu Bharatiyo, for reinforcing the teaching of the Buddha, the three Trikaya of the Buddha,
yeah,
and
yeah.
Also how the sati comes about.
Mm.
The other thing I mentioned to this cultivator is that, you see, when you want to develop sati, right, you have to be simple and not complicated.
Yeah,
so you
simple
start with
one.
very
Yeah.
simple thing. You start with a very simple thing, you know.
Yeah.
Don't like, wow, very, how you call that, ambitious.
Yeah, yeah. Like I
when you
recently
start,
sent out the Jai Krishnamurti quote. That one very good. You must start as if you don't know anything from zero base. Then you move from innocent to innocent. Means you start to discover things and you start to understand things. That should be the mind that can understand them. You don't go and store with all the knowledge and all things. Then with all the knowledge, views, opinion and conditioning, you try to go and look for it, you cannot find. Because the Dhamma, which is beyond thought, beyond mind, cannot be discovered using the instrument of thought. It can only be discovered if it is just without any sankhara activity. The mind must be in a state of relaxed, pure awareness. Then the relaxed, pure awareness without thought is our awareness nature. And that nature is just aware. And you cannot look for it. It has to arise to an understanding. When you understand that without thought you are dead, then no need to look for it. No need to try to be aware. No need. You just relax, maintain awareness, and let it stabilize, let it settle down. Then in the daily mindfulness, just do. Do until the body and mind become one. And then the cultivator will understand. Then when you are in sati, you will know one. No word, nothing. And nobody can actually develop the understanding except the cultivator. That's why the Buddha said, this Dhamma e pachetang can only be realized by the wise, each for themselves. Because without the wisdom and the understanding, it cannot be realized. It can only be realized through the silent mind, the awareness nature within. So all this will become clear through the cultivator. Okay?
Yes, very good, very good. I think this one will help them a lot.
Yeah,
and the
yeah.
other thing, I want to help them help.
The other kaimita to develop the faith and the understanding. So that
because a lot of cultivators, they cannot stop thinking, you know, Bharatiya.
Correct, correct.
Yeah,
the
mind
thought
is
very active. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. So the mind is so active. So I said, why not you do it this way? Do it a very simple thing, you know, like walking. You have to walk at home.
Ah, just
yes,
walk.
Yes, yes.
No need
to
know.
Walk.
Don't try to know.
Yes.
Just walk.
Walking, no need to think, no need to say, left, right, or whatever. Turn here,
no
turn
need,
there.
No need, no need. All the verbalization,
yes.
The labeling, all no need. If you
yes.
verbalize and label, you cannot get it one.
Yes, correct. So because we need to walk, you know, anyway in the house to shop, to whatever.
You just
like,
maintain awareness.
So you just walk and walk and walk, you know, don't need to think, you know, just walk. So I said, you do this every day, you know, and then one day you will realize you will see something different from
Completely different.
normal walking, you know. Actually, I don't tell what you see, but you will see the difference. When you see the difference, you will be full of joy. Then you realize, hey, something happened, you know, that your bodily movement is totally different, become
Yeah,
like slow down, you
completely
know,
different now.
become slow down. Although your pace is the same, but the movement like will show you in slow
Yeah,
motion what happened to your movement.
everything like become
Yes.
one. The awareness
So
and the activity become one.
yes.
Then no
So
thought one.
yes, correct, correct. So when you establish that, then you know you have some sati developed already. So this one is very simple. I said you start with this first. So I just give this homework to go and do this one 2 weeks. But don't look for anything, you know, just do, you know. The mind must be at ease, relax, you know, don't think, you know. Because the mind is so active, they must think, you know, that's the problem. So when they think, alamak, cannot already, you know. So this will help them to decondition their thinking mind, you
Yeah,
know,
the
to
healer's
relax.
thinking,
Yeah, without the thinking, more space between thoughts, you know, to help them to anchor their mind, you know, to the kaya, you know. This is so important. So this is what a small homework to do, you know, to help them, you know. I also remember during the Cameron retreat, I also mentioned to one Kayanita also, hopefully this Kayanita also remember, you know, that this is very important to establish your mindfulness, because when you don't have mindfulness, this one I find, I mean, personally, Brother, when I learned the Cameron retreat with Brother Teo in 2017, right? After that, 2019 and then 2020, right? This is what I use all the time, you know, when I walk, this, you know, Brother Teo. So I have to go and do grocery, I have to walk around the house doing chores, right?
That
So
should
this is
be
what
the
I
way.
use.
From
Yes.
your daily activity, you develop it. Because when you
Yes.
determine to be aware, the thought is no more there. You just aware, aware, aware. Everything you do,
Correct,
aware.
correct.
Then later on, when the time come, it will fall into place. Then like the body and mind move as one. Then the sati is there or not, automatic or not. Then the form and mind that is going through that, will understand what. Where you see it in you, and you understand what that thing is because you have done it. After you have done it, then only the words of the enlightened being that speak all this become meaningful. Otherwise, got no meaning on. You use the thought to try to understand and rationalize, you cannot understand. But once you have done it, it become like immediately you know or no. Like sugar is sweet, like you have tasted sugar, then no problem. After that, you no more doubt already. And you know what that thing is, different concentration of sugar, different sweetness, then sugar in different liquid. Again, the sweetness is different. All you understand already. You only need to really taste it. The moment you taste it, you understand what that thing is already. So sati is the same. You must realize it. The moment you realize it, the form and mind will know it, will understand what. And then after that, very easy to develop. Initially, it's always the problem where people try to gain the understanding through knowledge, through the thought process, trying to find out what that thing is. Then, via delusion, they use the thought to look for it. Then they read up, they follow instruction, they think they follow instruction, then they develop it through their own wrong understanding. But to really develop the understanding is not easy. You must have faith and, like you say, be simple. Don't be too complicated. Be simple means listen attentively. When people say, don't try to know, don't try to do, the meaning is very deep. And most Putujana, who have not awakened, they always have that conditioning of the mind to know. That mind that wants to know and too eager to like understand and awaken, that is the one blocking. Because for the sati to arise, thought must cease, and they cannot understand. And for thought to cease, there must be no curiosity, nothing. Don't even try to know or try to do or what. You just go about naturally, maintain awareness, to be aware, aware, aware. Then when it comes, the cultivator will understand one. You must establish it. That's why establishing it with the faith and the understanding is very important. So that part, I think, you try to impart into the Kayamita and develop their faith is very good. Mm. Sadhu.
Yes, no, yeah, Brother, that's true, you know, because after they have seen this sati, right, or experienced this sati with their meditative mind, right, the faith in the triple gem is unshakable, Brother.
Ah,
that's
yeah,
how
yeah.
I had, you know, in the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my faith is unshakable, you know, Brother.
Yeah,
it's
like
something happened to my mind, huh, that is suddenly transform, you know, become like that, you know.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
when they
yeah.
had that, huh, well, the faith in the triple gem is unshakable.
Yeah,
you know?
Unshakable.
You, yes. So it's like nothing, you have no doubt, you really have seen the Dharma, you have seen the Buddha, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You like your faith is truly zero doubt, lah, right?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Nothing can change it, you know.
Yes.
It's like it's deep inside your consciousness, you know, that
understanding is very, very stable and very strong. And that faith is like impossible not to develop that faith, because that is the reality that can be established by the individual, each by itself. And when it realizes that true nature, it understands the illusionary form of mind and everything that is created through the mundane activity of the five aggregate form of mind. So everything can be seen clearly and understood clearly. That's why no more doubt, nothing. That's why everything within the conditioned world are conditioned Dhamma. That one they will see very clearly. Each year you waver. Then Zhu Meng Huan Pao Ying. Zhu Meng means dreamlike. Huan is illusion, Huan Xiang. Pao is like a bubble, no reality. Then shadow. So all these famous Mahayana quote from the Diamond Sutta become very clear. Then after that, you will also understand the third stanza and the fourth stanza. The third stanza is Zhu Lu Yi Lu Tian, like a morning dew and a lightning flash, depending on the phenomena. But it is impermanent. It is not what we think. It is what we call like a morning dew and a lightning flash. Some very fast, instantaneously arise, gone. The other one is slower, like a morning dew. Then it dries up, because once the sun rises, the dew will evaporate. Then the description of it is very good. The last stanza, Ying Zuo Lu Si Guan, you have to contemplate it such, but that is the reality. Each year you waver means everything within the conditioned world is conditioned Dhamma, and that one is most profound. You penetrate that, you penetrate the rest. Then you will understand why the Buddha followed by the saying, Zhu Meng Huan Pao Yi. Then Zhu Lu Yi Lu Tian, then Ying Zuo Lu Si Guan. So that four stanza of the Diamond Sutta is very profound. It's so penetrative. And everything arises from the understanding of the first stanza. Because it's a conditioned world. Everything within the conditioned world, they arise and pass away as conditioned Dhamma. That's why each year you waver means within the conditioned world, everything is conditioned Dhamma. Then the other one is the supramundane. We call it the wefa. It's the unconditioned Dhamma. So within life, within existence, we have the conditioned world's conditioned Dhamma. You must understand and penetrate that. Then you must also realize the cessation to realize the unconditioned Dhamma. Then you know the unconditioned Dhamma and the conditioned Dhamma, they are two separate entities. But you have to understand both. You have to awaken to both. And then you can understand life. Then the whole thing become one. Then no more delusion, no more doubt. Then everything is just the way it is. All of creation, all of manifestation. Then you will understand the very profound teaching. Mind make hardy. Everything arises on the mind. 一切为心造, because it's all created by mind. Whatever within the conditioned world, mind make our day. So all these are very beautiful Dhamma which will link. Then when the nature awakens to it, it sees it very clearly. Then it understands, it's just the understanding, the wisdom. Then it transforms. Then the mind realizes itself, cessation happens. Then enlightenment in the here and the now will manifest. So all this become very clear to the cultivator of the way. That's why the Dhamma, like you say, is pachetang, can be realized by the wise each for themselves, and is unshakable. The moment you awaken to it, that faith is unshakable. Well, this one is not a theory, not a knowledge, or not something that you imagine or you believe in. It's beyond thought, beyond mind. It's no need to believe one. It is an awakening. It is the reality that one realizes and penetrate with such deep insight that it sees things as they are so clearly. Everything just manifests. And that nature is just so beautiful. That's why I say that awareness nature, when you go into it and develop the training and the what they call cultivation, it is really amazingly beautiful. It will continue to unfold a lot of things. And that stages of transformation, when it happens, it will really give rise to a lot of understanding which is unending and very beautiful. Okay, very good. Sadhu,
Sadhu, very beautiful, yes. Yeah. So very beautiful Dharma unfold, you know.
Yes.
Actually, what Brother Teo has said is very true, you know. When the nature awakens, right, the Dharma keep unfolding, you know, Brother Teo. So I keep seeing new things and new things. Brother Teo, what I want to say is this, you know, the amazing part is that every time my nature awakens, right, the Dharma unfold is always different one, no, brother?
Yeah, different one. That's why I say it's unending. Because human civilization, nature's manifestation, is a very extensive unfolding and it's unending one. Because it has a lot of what they call possibility. And this one, you cannot learn or understand everything. Right? Because it's not like perfection of wisdom. Perfection of wisdom can be perfected. But wisdom is unending, means this wisdom continue to unfold. It's a living one. It is forever unfolding. That's why when you arise as a form of mind, when you connect to that nature, then you can see all this manifestation. Then you realize this aspect of life, existence, and wisdom that is possible is unending. That's why in that quote, Jai Krishnamurti, very beautiful. He even mentioned, you don't even know where are you and what the thing is. Because that is what nature is. It will continue to unfold and manifest. And that immensity of that nature is so different. Not put together by thought, cannot be understood by thought. So that thing, when you are with it, is so immensely beautiful, amazingly beautiful. That's why all this description and understanding the cultivator will go through when they will evolve the understanding.
Yeah, so beautiful, variety of Krishnamurti. Yeah, that is precisely what happened to me, that I don't expect such thing can happen, like manifest, unfold in this way, you know.
Every time
when it happened, it's like very different, you know, variety of the teaching of the true Dharma is very different, you know. I don't know how to say it. It's just inconceivable that the Dharma is the way it manifests and unfolds
I sent to the Maikayamita, sorry, I didn't just send it to the WhatsApp. I tried to get it from the email, then I forwarded it out again. I sent it to the email, the Maikayamita website. Okay, maybe I get it out, then I will send it again.
But I haven't looked at it because I haven't looked at my email for some time.
I read to you all better. I said, "Dear Kayamita, below is a very profound and most beautiful Jai Krishnamurti code on meditation for sharing by all with metta always." So you listen. Jai Krishnamurti say, "Meditation is the movement of love. Meditation is one of the most extraordinary things. And if you do not know what it is, you are like a blind person in a world of bright colors, shadow, and moving lights. It is not an intellectual affair. When the heart enters the mind, see? Heart enters the mind means your true nature merge with that mind. The mind has quite a lot of different quality. It is really then limitless, not only in its capacity to think, to act efficiently, but also in its sense of living in a vast space where you are part of everything. And meditation is the movement of love. It isn't the love of the one or of the many. It is like water that always can drink out of any jar, whether golden or earthen. It is inexhaustible. Then the next part is the best. This meditation cannot be learned from another person. You must realize it yourself. You must begin with knowing nothing. Means without knowing anything about it, and move from innocent to innocent. The soil in which the meditative mind can begin is the soil of everyday life, like you realize and share just now. Means everyday life within the strife, the pain, and the fleeting joy. It must begin only there and brings about order, and from there move effortlessly. See? You must take a plunge into the water not knowing how to swim, and the beauty of meditation is that you never know where you are, where you are going, and what the mind is. So, excerpt from Meditation, 1969 by Jai Krishnamurti. So this code is very beautiful. So maybe I will send it to the Maikayamita as an attachment. I do it now. Yeah, I do it now.
It's a very beautiful quote by J.K. Krishnamurti. It really tell you that you start with zero, so that you be simple and you can, not be burdened by your memory, your knowledge, that cannot help you at all in developing the meditative mind. Yeah, so
Maybe I
very
will.
true, .
Yeah, I will send it later because I don't know how to forward this one. Oh yeah, Pocheng, you continue. Sorry, another 5 more minutes.
Well, Theo, I also have not read it because I haven't been looking at my email for some time as
Yeah,
well.
yeah, yeah.
So I'm glad that you bring it up so that we can understand the quote from J.K. Krishnamurti. Yeah. So just now, as I was saying, right, so we should start with zero baseline. If we start with a burden with all the knowledge and conditioning, it's very difficult to understand the true Dharma, especially developing the sati, and so without sati, we cannot really learn the true Dharma itself. That is the very profound statement, I would say.
Yeah.
But
Because that
but
quote
it's
is very beautiful. That quote, when I saw, yeah, oh, I say this guy, J. Krishnamurti, he's really good. How
yeah.
can he develop such understanding? Because he must have realized it. Otherwise, he can't. And it's very profound. Very profound. That's why,
Yeah,
in that
so
sense, he also understands that this is unending. And you don't know where you are, also. Not to say, who are you, what are you? Well, that form of mind is not you. But he used the word, when the heart and the mind meet, that's what you become. Means your nature and that thing become one, that oneness nature. Then within that, this whole thing manifests. That's why his wisdom, for him to reach this understanding, is not simple. He has his cultivation tool, for him to describe it so beautifully.
yes, I would think so, Ratio, because I do not know what is his background. But then, with I'm learning from Ratio the awareness nature right through the gateway. I mean, this itself is already very profound, and you don't hear it. In fact, you don't hear anybody talk about this at all, except Ratio in this Dharma, sharing.
Correct.
We only
I
hear
already
Krishna.
told you, even within the Buddhist fraternity, you try to read up the books and find out, you can't find such comprehensive teaching that extend to this type of understanding of the unconditioned and the conditioned. All these are not there. In fact, the Bodhisattva way, the four circle formation, most of the teaching that has been taught until now is not comprehensive enough. They didn't take you to that extent of understanding. But that's the way nature is. Well, all this take time to evolve. And it so happened my nature has the condition and the understanding to share this. That's why Maitreya came to all it and requested my nature's condition to actually help transmit the true Dhamma, the true teaching. And that particular message was very profound. When I receive it, I knew what that thing is, and I knew my nature can do it. And so fast, already 20 years, 20 plus a bit already. So all this is unfolding and becoming more and more beautiful and meaningful.
Yes, Baratio, what I want to summarize is here, that without this gateway penetration, right,
Yeah, you can't. Yeah, you
nature
cannot reach
is
that type of cultivation.
yes, correct, Baratio, because this unconditioned Dharma, through this gateway,
Yeah, you
through
need
our
the
perception.
awareness nature to do one.
Yes,
Trust, that trust, the fourth
the
support.
trust. Yes, correct. I, in fact, because of this, right, that our cultivation is a lot faster in our variety, right?
A
Yeah.
lot faster.
Yes,
But
and then
this one, you when you go into that nature through the gateway, you actually transform very fast, and the unfolding inside there is none of the thing that the living being, unless those who have gone through, most living beings can never understand one, because they never touch it or seldom touch it. In fact, my last guide told me, he said, Teo, do you know? For people who have the ability to reach the gateway, he said, as far as he knows, they are at least 80 years and beyond. By that time, I was very lucky because my nature, I have the vow. Then I met him. And at that time, I was 35 years old. And he himself told me, he said, whoever who can do it, he is at least 80 years old. He said, that's what he told me. Then I look back, I realize, yeah, if it's not because of my vow and my special miscellaneous vow and nature, on my own, I would have to, at least, I use the word at least, 10 to 15 years to locate that gateway. So if I have taken, let's say, 10 years is the fastest. By then I would have been 45. Then to cultivate until now, I would have been 80. But now I'm 70. 10 years later, I mean 80 to reach the level of understanding. But I was lucky because of my vow. So that special vow actually helped a lot. So all these are meant to be. Then a lot of karmita also, because of the affinity, you all can develop the understanding and the benefits from it. That's why I say this window is very rare, this golden window. Make full use of it and aditan, determine, so that this understanding follow you life after life whenever you choose to come or you have to come. Then you will learn very fast, you will progress very fast. Otherwise, this way is going to be too long. Too long, really too long. That's why without all these causes and conditions, the Bodhisattva way actually is very, very long. But with this new understanding, it can cut short a lot, and more gripings will actually develop the understanding and transform much faster. Then in future, the future great beings that come, they also evolve faster understanding and transformation. That's why all this, if you understand how generation after generation, all this teaching can evolve and become more and more beautiful. Even the original Virochana Buddha, from him or her until now, he has progressed a lot, he has evolved a lot. But if you look at the whole, what they call manifestation of the form and mind leading to the cultivation, and every segment of your life you come, depending on what civilization, how long can you live, and each segment within the lifespan, like this civilization of ours as a human being, average lifespan may be 75. Even if you are lucky, you live up to 80 something, 90. But to me, beyond 80, you are not so healthy already. You are quite fragile already, going downhill already. So it's not easy. Then every life you come, how much can you learn? How much can you develop the understanding to evolve? That's why without this understanding, the yellow card that I have developed for you all. It's not easy. But with this format, the yellow card one, when you make the aspiration and the aditan to life after life, whenever you arise or choose to arise, to have all this right view, right understanding of the Dhamma and cultivation, and then it becomes different. Means whether sasana or non-sasana, you can still move, you can still progress, you can still develop the understanding. Then different people can develop the vow differently. Like my case, I was lucky. I didn't vow to locate the gateway, you know. I only vow at any time when my nature arises to develop the highest wisdom possible. And that one gave me the break. Because I don't know why I make the vow. I don't want to be sectarian. My nature say I vow to realize the wisdom, the highest wisdom at any one time when my nature arises. And because of that, my last guide come. And I penetrated all this. So all these are meant to be. Even my second last guide at that time also asked me 3 times, do you know who are you? Then he repeated. Then after that he said, he told me one hint. He said, you came with a very, very heavy vow. The moment she said that, deep inside me, I say, I know. I know what that vow is. Because that vow was with me all the time. At any time when my nature arises, I want to know the highest wisdom or understand the highest wisdom. That's how it manifests and becomes what it is. Okay, we better end, Pojeng. Yeah.
Yes, Mahasadhu, brother dear.
Yeah, Mahasadhu, for the good condition. Yeah, yeah. So let us now rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then we share merit, transfer merit, then we end. Aka satta cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditva cirang rakan tu loka sasana etta watta chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabbasampati siddhiya idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatiyo idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatiyo idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatiyo devo wasadukalena sasa sampati hetu cha vito bhavatu loko cha Raja Bhavatu Dhammiko Imina Punyang Kamina Mame Bala Samagamo Satang Samagamo Hotu Yawa Nivana Patiya Sadhu Sadhu Sadhu. Okay, you all can now pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Kuan Bodhisattva, and all the worthy ones. There we end. Thank you. Sadhu.